live from where summer colds suck. This is Culture Vultures with Dirk and Otto, episode number 180 for July 13th, 2018. Greetings, everybody. I'm your host, Dirk Belligerent, and with me once again, the hacking cough, my runny nose, Otto the Autopilot. Say hello, Otto.
Hey, everybody. How you doing? We're clear and we're ready to go here on the Culture Vultures.
Deep. Yep. Deep. Yes, sorry for the delay, folks, if you're a regular listener or if you discovered us with episode 179, Satori's Got Talent, our great interview with Satori Circus. Anyway, yeah, we followed that up immediately by me having a really nasty cold, and then the following week, America had a birthday, and Otto got the cold.
Yeah, I've been ripping out my yard because, you know, I'm on leave from the CIA, right? And
right.
I guess I've got, like, all these speckles and spots around my feet, and apparently I kicked up a little too much pollen there, and it took root, man.
Ugh, yeah, so anyway, it's been rough, and it's been really hot. So we've been kind of like...
had some good days in between,
coughing
though.
And wheezing and just being unhappy. So anyway, but we are back, and we've got a whole bunch of stuff we're going to talk about. We got a little bit of mop-up from the last episode. We'll talk quickly about Satori's show Stroke that I dragged myself down to. You were fine. I wasn't so hot.
Yeah. Good show.
We'll be doing a complete spoilers beatdown of Jurassic Mansion, pointless sequel. which I saw and Otto avoided. He's the lucky one of us.
I am a happy little boy.
We will have a spoiler-free review of Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is not the same as Ant-Man and Wasp, which we posted on our Facebase page. But anyway,
pretty good.
Anyway, so then we have some other odds and ends, some TV news, some movie news, and all kinds of goodies as we try to catch up on the things that have happened in the last few weeks. If you are listening to us at podcastdetroit.com, our host with the most, they have a new studio. They moved their downtown Detroit studio over to Mac and MLK area.
Oh, nice.
So, anywho,
have they opened it yet?
They are in the process of opening it. I think they were doing some testing this week. So,
okay.
Anyway,
waiting for that invite to the opening party.
They're moving on up. So anyway, if you discovered us through there, or if you just found us through Reddit, Facebase, anywhere else that you've seen the links, Reddit, I said Reddit already. Anyway, please go to culturevulturesradio.com. That's culturevulturesradio.com, where you can subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. We are also on Spotify for your listening pleasure. You can follow us on Twitter. You can give us a like at Facebase, get the little in-between things that are going on, the updates, which will be like, there's no show this week because we don't feel good, and all the other ends and goodies. So anyway, if you're probably going to be able to tell, thanks to high-quality recording equipment, we're a little gravelly, even though I've been feeling mostly human for the last few days. I'm still feeling a little congested and stuff, and poor Otto here has just been having a kind of sad time. So anyway,
hey, you know, it keeps life from being boring, but you know, and listen to the tone it gives me. I mean, you talk about deep Otto. I mean, I'm deep Otto without even trying, you know.
Anyhow, please bear with us, listen, there's a lot of people who work in a lot worse shape than you do, so
we can
suck it up for the cause.
We're doing it because we love you.
Anyway, the day we're taping on the 12th, and today is Bob, I'm going to kill somebody, Kosky's birthday, so happy birthday.
Bob, I'm going to kill some birthday cake, Kosky.
Exactly. He's as old as you feel after you've been pimp-flapping your hose or getting out of line.
Man, he must. He's got him lined. Could you imagine if he lined him up like birthday candles for himself?
Well, the thing
white candle's going to be dipping.
The thing, he's got to like round up enough girls so each one only has to spank him twice. So, anyhow, we're going to be taking
him out to dinner
tomorrow at Mudgy's in Las Galanas. So, if you're listening to on the Patreon.
Yeah, then we're going to the punk rock show afterward down at Kelly's. Kelly's in Hamtown.
I haven't heard about that.
Don't worry about it. Just see Kelly's in Hamtown tomorrow night.
In Hamtown.
In the punk rock hours.
So last episode, 179, Satori's Got Talent, and you can go check that out at culturevulturesradio.com. We had Satori Circus in, and he was plugging his upcoming show, Stroke, which is now 2 weeks in the past. And it was interesting. It was a different kind of thing for him, not just because he had the colored makeup and whatnot, but because he had backup singers. And he had a couple of guys from the Haberdasher, the other band that was playing that show that night, singing stuff. In fact, they took lead on one song, and that was just very different. Anyway, it was it was a fun, uplifting, peppy, feel-good show of the year.
Yeah, and the hot chick in the show sat next to me for most of it.
Yeah, that was cool.
I thought it's just because the chair's open.
No, it's got this head reserved
on it. Oh, cool. Well, I'm glad she was cute, and she was digging how I was digging it, because I was totally digging the show.
Yeah, I was surprised she got out of the show for that long, you know, only to come back after he's killed himself. Spoiler. So anyway, yeah, it was another Satori Circus, very interesting thing. It's just, let's put it this way, it would make a really cool art film.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. I was sitting there watching. I go, I could do this.
Without going into great detail, anyone who knows Satori knows that he went totally off his usual, you know, it was something totally new, and it was a new direction, and it was a pretty good direction, I thought.
Yeah.
It was very entertaining, and that's one of the things I love about him. You know, you never know. Yeah, just never know. And that's quality entertainment. That's why Random Access Talk is so awesome.
Yes, it is. So anyway, go check that out. If you didn't happen to catch that episode, or if you're just discovering us now, please check that out. And we also have a bunch of other interviews linked at the site. Anyway, one thing that came up is, you were talking to him, and he says, well, Dirk doesn't know what it's like to act. And I'm like, actually, I have acted.
Right. We've never covered this before. And you seem mildly offended. So I was
it's more like, it's like, what do you mean?
You were like almost like Sir Thespian going, sir, I will break out my white glove and slap you with it. No,
forwardly.
Yes. We had never talked about it, so I assumed wrongly that you hadn't.
Now is a perfect time. Okay. Maybe to be honest, or to not overstate it, I have acted in a I performed in a play, whether you want to
trip beneath the proscenium arch.
I performed in a play, whether it was acting is up for other people.
No, you performed, dude. You have done that. Yeah.
So what happened?
Have you done it multiple times?
I've done one show, and let me tell you what it is. Okay. First of all, here in suburban Detroit, there is a long running, very, you know, respected theater company called Stagecrafters. Mm-hmm. Okay. They took over what used to be the Washington Theater, where I saw Xanadu a dozen times, and they turned it back into the Baldwin Theater, which what it originally was, mm-hmm. back when it was originally built. It's like a, you know, movie theater stage. I mean, it's got full stage.
Right.
And my mom, who was an actress, and she had done performances, like they did A Christmas Carol, and she was the Ghost of Christmas Past. So that was kind of cool. And she's not as if, and also on 4th Street across from the Royal Oak Music Theater, there used to be a little theater in there. I can't remember what the company was called.
Oh, yes. I know what you're talking about.
And
I forgot that too.
And she did, she was the judge in a performance of, Nuts, which Barbra Streisand made into a movie.
Yeah.
So anyhow, what happened, they redid the balcony. They turned it and closed it off, and they turned it into a small black box theater.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they call it the second stage. And super creative. Well, anyway, they did a performance of a play. This was in 1988. It was just before my 21st birthday. And it was a play called Angels Fall. It was by Lanford Wilson. And I think it was like an off-Broadway sort of thing. And the original cast had Bernard Hughes and God, what was the other guy? It was one of these actors like, oh, yeah, I've seen this guy. He was in Creepshow.
Fritz Weaver?
Yes.
Really?
Well, he was in the original stage cast. Well, anyway, it's a play about a half a dozen people who meet in a missionary in New Mexico when there's been a nuclear accident nearby, and they have to kind of take shelter there.
Okay.
Anyway, there's a middle-aged couple, there's a who's a professor and his wife, and then there's the priest who runs the mission, and then his foster son or adopted son, who's a Native American, and whatnot. And then there's this middle-aged woman, widow, and her boy toy pro tennis player.
Oh, boy.
Salvatore Zappi Zapala. That was me.
Oh, my God.
So I'm playing this, you know, this boy
Jerky
toy
Zapala.
For a middle-aged woman. So anyway...
Isn't that what you are now?
Except I'm middle-aged now. Okay. Shut up. So what happened is I did this play, and I think I did okay. You know, I mean, the other people were like really super serious
about
this sort of stuff.
He never critiques his own performance. He waits for the critics to give it to them.
Well, no one threw anything at me.
Kidding.
But the thing that's funny is the woman who directed the play, one of the notes she kept yelling for me is, mm-hmm. Claw... Because what would happen is, this once again, this is because this is radio, you can't see what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But when I would be emoting and talking about how my feelings, I would put my hand in front of me like, you know, a claw, not
hands out, but like inside.
Right.
Like,
if you pressed it against your chest, people would think you're having a heart attack.
Exactly. So I would do this. Like,
or you're palpating something.
Well, no, actually, it's like if I flattened my wrist out.
You're grabbing the nutsack of Jesus.
No, I'm holding a skull like York. Oh. Okay, God. Well, where do you go with this?
You know how my mind works, man. It's a twisted corridor.
Yeah, so what happened is that was like the one note I always had to watch out for. I had a monologue about what, you know, the thrill of playing tennis. Like, I mean, I don't remember much about this. The only thing that really stood out from the experience is that we were joking about how that we would put on the in the dressing room on the blackboard, it says a Quinn Martin production and the Angels Fall Dancers, you know, a Quinn Martin production, because this was, you know, again, 80s, so that was still fresh, the Barnaby Jones sort of thing. Anyway, we did, I don't know, 4 or 6 shows of that and whatnot. But then the director of that play, she advised me, it's like, hey, I'm going to be directing a show called The Nerd. And she goes, take a look at the script and take a look at the role of Axel. Okay, and I know I've mentioned this in the past. So I auditioned for this role, and this guy, I really thought I would have got it, because this guy was like a sarcastic smartass. The show was set in Terre Haute, Indiana. And my character was somebody who worked with was like a theater critic for a newspaper that had such an early deadline he could never see the end of the play. And one of the other characters says, yeah, as far as he know, Romeo and Juliet live happily ever after. You know, Godot shows up, you know, and all this other stuff. Well, anyway, and then this one character comes in who's the nerd. So I thought I had this role in the bag, because the director of my show said, hey, you should check this out. So I go there. And they cast, like, the woman who was my partner in the play as one of the characters in this. And then they cast the guy who played the Indian as my role. I was like, jerk, you know?
It wasn't your role because you didn't get it.
So, the part I was going to play. The part I auditioned for. The part I was going for. So, anyway, I went and I actually ushered the show because I wanted to actually see how it turned out. And now, granted, you know, you can just say, oh, it's because you're bitter, man. Maybe. Okay. But the thing is, I sat there and I watched this guy kill lines that should have, okay, he muffed lines that should have killed, I should have said. He was just, the thing is that he was kind of like a jolly, you know, fellow guy. And the thing is, he was playing the character friendly and boisterous, and I was going to play it dark and cynical as it was written. Okay, so this guy was doing lines that should have had teeth and they had no teeth, and I'm just like, yeah,
can I just apologize to you, because you are an actor, because you're catty as a bitch about this.
Well, the thing is that was disillusioning. And then they did a production of Little Shop of Horrors, and I went up for that, and I was
Warren
going
Scrivello?
I was going for Scrivello. I was going for Scrivello, and also I think I'd read. I think I tried Seymour. Or no, what, no, excuse
take,
me. Seymour.
Take one, guess.
Audrey Chu.
Take one guess. If I go in for an audition for Little Shop of Horrors, what part they would put me in as?
Mushnick.
Got that right. there were plays that we did in high school that my directors and producers specifically picked because there was a character in that show that they were like, Otto's doing this one, and if Otto can't do it, we're not doing that one.
Wow.
Yeah, I was flattered every time, because they never told me until afterward. Because, you know, I'd go through the audition process, and I'm total dilgaff the whole way, you know, because I don't give a fuck. You know, I can project from the diaphragm, and I was in a band, and I really didn't give a shit. I just loved doing it.
Sure.
So, they would plan plays around a character that they had designated for me. And, you know, basically it was, you know, the carrier of the show, like a Mushnick or, Uncle Stanley and George Washington slept here.
Okay.
You know, so that's right. alert. Here comes Otto to audition.
Well, the thing is, so I went through the thing, and this one woman got the Audrey Chu part. She was doing it as this kind of like, I want to say Sadie Thompson sort of role, very brassy and stuff.
Right.
I got it. Okay. The thing is that, you know, when I didn't get cast for that one, I realized basically there's a whole element of cliquish theater games.
Oh, totally.
Okay? And the thing is, I had no interest in getting into that. Okay. And the thing is, that's the way the business is. All right. And I just didn't want to play that game. So I didn't play the game. That was the last time I went.
Yeah, it is a brutal game to play. Satori is lucky in how in his persona and how he is able to how did you say that to me? We were talking about something and you say he just kind of floats above it.
Yeah.
You know, and he's, and he's fortunate that way.
He doesn't deal in the politics and stuff like this.
He's the Sweden of performance people.
But he also has the advantage that he's the only one in town doing this sort of thing.
Well, his is always, he's a true original.
Yeah. So, I mean, but there's like, in an area of, metro area of 4 billion plus people, you think there'd be somebody else, but there not, isn't really.
No.
I'm proud
to call him friend because I dig hanging out with him and just, and, you know, like I'd given him the compliment on the air during the show, you know, it's more than just that. It's not, I'm not saying that because he's my friend. I'm saying that because,
oh yeah,
you know, I was a fan before I became a friend.
Let's put it this way. You know, we're not talking him up because he's a friend and we don't have to lie about his quality because he's a friend. He's good and we're honored to know him. So.
And if you're curious, Chirk it Ert.
Yes, definitely.
That is high. That comes with a 100% CV recommendation.
And after we taped the show, he asked if he could come back and then do a little plug when the 30th anniversary is, like, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, you are welcome. So to come in. And I hope he brings Conrad. me and Conrad, we've got a really weird relationship, and Satori kind of acts as a buffer between us, and I love Conrad. Yeah. Who doesn't love Conrad? Everyone How can Conrad. You not love Conrad? I'd love to have him on the show.
All right. Speaking of people who are loved or maybe not loved, Chris Hardwick.
Who's that guy?
Let's update what's going on with Chris. There's not a lot of big news, but a couple things did break. First of all, Jamie Alexander, Lady Sif, and Hot Topic from Blind Spot, or as Hermione called it, Mad Face and Hot Topic. Anyway, she defended him. She says that she doesn't believe the accusations and his friend, and I'm following my heart and I believe in him. So we'll throw that link up in the show notes for 180 here.
Shirley MacLaine on that? He sounds like a real Southern gentleman. I bet he empties the dishes out of the sink before he pees in it.
And is that Steel Mongolians?
Yeah.
Okay. I always call it Steel Mongolians. I can't stop saying that.
Oh, man. Could you imagine? That'd be a great action flick.
Steel Mongolians.
Maybe the sequel to The Great Wall with Matt Damon.
No, but
Steel Mongolians.
Except the thing is, you have the cast from Steel Magnolias. You have Julia Roberts and
Olivia Dukakis
and Shirley MacLaine. Sally
Field, Shirley MacLaine, Dolly Parton, Daryl Hannah.
Gosh. All right.
I've seen it a few times.
So anyway, Comic-Con, which you don't want to call Comic-Con, we know this. Anyway, for the panel there, we were discussing whether that Yvette Nicole Brown should do it, and she will be doing it. She'll be handling the both Walking Dead panels that are going to be going on at Comic-Con. I haven't been keeping track of what's going on with that. We'll talk about it after it's over, because preview is meaningless. Let's talk about what they actually show.
Right.
Alrighty then. Anyway, so that's what's going on with that. But speaking of Me Too, the latest scandal, and once again, this shows that, you know, there's going to be a lot of recurring, you know, things that are going to be cropping up in the show. You'll notice as we talk about this. So anyway, he did a big feature in GQ magazine because Mission Impossible Fallout is coming out in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, he's talking about how basically because of, the new rules in Me Too, he's like scared to date. Okay, now Hermione sent me this story.
Tom Cruise said this?
No. Henry Cavill. Mm-hmm. So Henry was doing this profile in GQ magazine, and he's talking about how basically he's afraid to date because the thing is that basically, you know, the whole pursuit, the old fashioned thing, it's like, hey, you want to go out? No. It's like, come on. So it's like, basically now it's like, you know, they say no and that's it. You go away. And then they're like, well, why didn't you ask again? It's because you'll accuse me of rape. Well,
exactly.
So anyway, this is a common sense thing. Well, immediately all the feminists, you know, immediately clutched their pearls and screamed, well, you know how you don't get accused of rape? Don't rape. No.
That's an oversimplification.
Because there is a thing, God, where was it? I think it's in Reason.com. I didn't read the article. I just saw the headline, so I don't want to go too deep in it. But the headline was basically, listen, you know, we need to separate the difference between being a jerk and being a rapist, okay?
Yeah. Have you ever seen the bit about the date I wish I could remember the show. A guy wants to date a girl. They meet. Oh, this is my representative. They're going to check you out. Oh, well, in 1984, you'd never call this woman back. And by the time they're all done tearing this guy apart, he's like, okay, judging for inflation, $42 should do it. And he takes out his wallet and he puts it down. He's like, great date. And she's like, call me again. When I save up the money, I will. You know, and it's just like, you know, she's got the guy, you know, This is what we're going to. This is what we're moving towards. Hi. Talk to my representative. We'll set up the meeting. We'll set up a play date.
You know,
a meet cute.
Exactly. You know, the thing is, and I saw some people discussing this sort of stuff, not this particular story. They said the thing is, though, is that now it's going to start giving more incentive for men to basically surreptitiously record their encounters.
Yep.
Which is, here's the thing, is like, he raped me. No, I didn't, because I've got this tape. You've got a tape? Bam, boom, you're off the jail.
Oh, I must have been drunk.
Yeah. All right. Got a couple of TV things I want to talk about really quickly. Got a couple of stories. I'm going to skip those right now. A couple of years ago, we had Ming Chen from Comic Book Men.
Yes.
And now he's going to be Ming Chen, unemployed comic book store guy who's on TV because Comic Book Men got canceled. Don't know what that is about, but I guess they realized, wait a minute, this has been on our air all this time.
Yeah.
AMC just noticed it was on the schedule or something. So
why don't they keep him, man? It's a fun show. The guys are all good. You know, I've been there and I'm friends with Ming. And that's why he was here on the show.
Yep.
You know, I mean, with all the other garbage and crap that you're pumping out, that was at least a show that had unique characters. And yeah, some setups, but
oh yeah, but
this is the way these guys are. If you went to that shop, you know, cameras on, cameras off, it's pretty much slice of life, and you're not going to get much closer.
Sure,
you know,
and, I mean, in all these sort of like, you know, found treasure shows, Antiques Roadshow, Pawn Stars, and all the other stuff. I mean, there's this format to the things, and people watch them for those
and
reasons.
People like them.
Sure,
and I got no problem with that because. It's nice that we have so much to choose from.
Sure.
But to start, you know, giving it, you know, specifications, it's like, what the fuck else are you going to do? You know, you're included in the package, bitch.
Sure. Alrighty then. Also, in bad television news, this is kind of a sad thing. So Netflix may be getting ready to raise some prices.
Yeah.
Jerks. Anyway, they're testing prices over in Europe. Now, I don't know if this is for new subscribers only or whether they're going to plan on raising prices, but they're basically testing much higher prices, if you ask me. I mean, they're gonna get more expensive than HBO, which is going to be.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Which is going to be kind of a problem. So anyway, what they're doing is they're talking about. I mean, currently, right now, the top plan you can get is $14 a month. It gets you four screens. It gets you 4K. You know, and service and stuff like that.
It's a pretty good deal.
Sure. I mean, it was $12, but you know, so fine. $14, that's fine. The thing is, now they're talking like maybe $16, and you get 4K, but no HDR, which is all that matters. In fact, Dynasty, the reboot with what's her name, Elizabeth Gillies, is from CW. That is in 1080p, but HDR. So
HDR is not high definition recording,
high dynamic range.
Oh, high dynamic range. Okay,
I did a big rant back last
December
about it. No. So high dynamic range makes the colors brighter and punchier and, you know,
and you've proven to me the difference, but
hey, I mean, I showed you Pacific Rim 4K HDR. Holy cow. It's a totally different beast. It's still a shitty movie, but it looks great, you know?
Amazing visuals. But
so,
I mean,
but now they're talking that they may give you 4K, but no HDR. I'm sorry. I'll trade the 4K for the HDR.
Right. So you would have to pay extra for the HDR package.
Yes. And also they might cut you back to two screens. So you may be looking at like now they're charging 20 euros, up to 20 euros. Might be 16 euros, 20 euros,
right,
which is like $25. Now, granted, the taxes over there are much higher because of all that free stuff the governments provide.
Right.
But anyway, so this may be in our future. I mean, hot on the heels of Amazon jacking up the prices. So.
Yeah, but you know what? I really don't have a problem with Amazon raising the price for the quality and for what you get. I mean, Jesus Christ, dude. I have been watching like a fortune. So many documentaries have dropped on Prime.
Sure.
It's like I can't keep up, and I'm amazed at the movies that got added. Couldn't believe it.
The thing is, it's funny though, Hermione always calls me up. There's nothing to watch. No. There's plenty to watch.
I
go through my list. I'm like, holy crap. When am I ever going to get through any of this? You know, it's just ridiculous. Speaking of Amazon, I was going to skip this, but since I just mentioned it, let's like,
okay.
So Amazon is evil, right?
I actually like them.
Well, you see how you like them after this deal. So anyway, Toys R Us finally closed all their stores.
They're gone.
Okay.
Three bells for Toys R Us. I mean, come on.
Well, anyway, the official story has been that, vulture capitalism and late stage capitalism destroyed it because they laid in with debt and they buried the company.
Right.
Yeah, but then there's a little detail that I wasn't aware of, okay? And this is, and I'll throw the story, the link in the show notes for 180 here. But basically, Amazon screwed Toys R Us in the very beginning of the internet and basically put them in a hole. Now, the vulture capitalist stuff didn't help, but here's what happened. In 2000, Amazon signed an exclusive deal to be the toy provider on Amazon.com, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Toys R Us would pay Amazon $50 million a year for the right to be the exclusive toy seller, with a few exceptions, right, on Amazon.com. So they didn't have to build websites. They got to leverage Amazon. Amazon got toys. Everybody wins, right?
Right.
2004, Amazon decides, yeah, we're going to start selling toys from other places too. Okay. But even though they changed their deal with Amazon, or excuse me, with Toys R Us, Toys R Us was still locked into the deal. So basically, mm-hmm, Amazon broke the deal, screwed Toys R Us, and Toys R Us couldn't do anything about it except for sue. So what happens is, in 2006, they win the lawsuit, okay?
Yeah.
But one of the details that came out in the suit was part of the arrangement with Amazon forbade Toys R Us from having their own website.
Yeah.
So they did not, Toys R Us did not have a website, ToysRUs.com, until 2006. So basically, almost the first decade of the internet blowing up in as a major thing with AOL, yeah, and stuff like this, they weren't online. So everybody else had a freaking head start.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, granted, that was 12 years ago, and there's other factors that are happening, and more people are buying online than going to stores. People are having fewer kids.
Right.
And whatnot. Still, that didn't really help. Okay.
No.
And some people are starting to notice that what Amazon is doing is they're basically doing what Walmart was accused of doing. Walmart used to be accused of setting up shop near small towns, wiping out the main street stores. Everyone has to go to the Walmart.
Okay. Right.
My aunt and uncle in small town Pennsylvania, they had a little general store. Walmart opened nearby. Boom. They're wiped out.
Yep.
Okay. Creative destruction. It's what happens. So jump ahead now. Amazon is now wiping out all sorts of businesses, and now they're starting to open brick and mortar businesses. Like, they're starting to open bookstores.
Really?
Okay. They bought Whole Foods, so now they're doing that. They just bought some pharmaceutical, dispensary, mm-hmm, sort of thing. So now they're starting to deliver that.
So Jeff, the wish fulfillment.
Jeff Bezos is the richest man in history right now. Okay.
Wow.
But you also, what's interesting though, is that he owns the Washington Post, and Trump's always whining about that. But here's, mm-hmm, the interesting thing. If you look online, you'll see lots of stories about how mistreated the employees are in Amazon warehouses.
Uh-huh.
Washington Post is not reporting this. Gee, I wonder why.
Mm-hmm.
Must be nice to own your own paper. One of the big two real newspapers, authority, and they're not covering what would be, you think would be a big labor issue.
Yeah.
That would be something
you'd want to put on the record. And aren't they the second paper of record?
They're the paper that has the headline after Trump took office of "Democracy Dies in Darkness." Okay. But apparently your Amazon employees get to be mistreated with impunity because, now granted, if the Sulzbergers owned, Amazon, Washington, mm-hmm, Post would be all over that.
Right.
So anyway, that's fun. So Amazon, sure. They have plenty of documentaries, but you're paying for it in people's blood. Tonight's music. I don't know why it's popping in my head. But Thomas Dolby. Let's talk about him for a quick moment.
He created stereo.
Surround sound. Nope, that's the other guy.
Do you know he was married to Kathleen Beller? Or Catherine Beller?
Who?
The hot princess chick from The Sword and the Sorcerer.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we'll be looking this up.
Long ago.
Okay.
I read a story about how he was, in the early days of videotape and camcorders.
Sure.
He was being disruptive during the birth of their child because he wanted to videotape, and he was one of the first people like that.
He was the first that guy.
Yeah. But I mean, if you know the woman, it's like, why wouldn't
I? I'll be looking that
up. I'd like to be watching that shit over and over again.
No, it's not attractive. No.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Okay, sure.
I'm a father. It's goddamn most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
I took a first responder course, and a mutual friend of ours, her became a grandmother, and she was there with her daughter when she was giving birth.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, when I took a first responder course, one of the final bits was emergency childbirth. And they showed the movie, and I'm just sitting there, I'm like, if they show this to high school girls, like, have sex, this happens to you,
It didn't work. They showed us that movie in high school, and
40%
did.
Ow.
Yeah, wow. It did not deter.
Ooh, what's wrong with people? That's, you know.
People like to fuck. That's why in underdeveloped countries, there's 8 billion people. Because when you got no money and you got no food, well, you want to fuck? Okay.
This is why Netflix should not be raising their prices.
How do you get to that?
Because it's, you know, well, you say you got no money and food, so why do you have no money? You have no money for Netflix, so what are we going to do for entertainment? See,
fuck.
The thing is, you know, exactly. But the thing is, if you have affordable Netflix, then you're going to be watching TV.
No, then they'll be fucking while they're watching Netflix.
Netflix and chill.
I put her in the doggy position, put my bear on her back. And then I can watch my Breaking Bad and I can still get my nut off.
They talk,
come make me chicken wings, Bates rolls.
People in the third world sound like rednecks.
God. Yes, they do.
Okay.
Open your eyes, kids.
Okay. Enough.
Third world's right here. Yeah.
All right. So anyway, Thomas Dolby. Everyone knows She Blinded Me with Science. We will not be playing that. Okay?
No, he has so many better things, and I heard a sample. So
yeah, this is my favorite Thomas Dolby song. This is Europa and the Pirate Twins. This is off of the same album, The Golden Age of Wireless, that Blinded Me with Science came from. And but I dig it. It's a cool tune. So
it's
anyway,
my first favorite video on MTV, or one of them.
You know, I don't really remember the video that much.
It's just really kind of Art of Noisy. Like if Laurie Anderson directed it.
Ah, okay. Well, we'll throw that in the show notes for episode 180 at Culture Vulture Radio now. But right now, this is Thomas Dolby, Europa, and the Pirate Twins. This is Podcast Detroit because we're the Culture Vultures.
We'll be right back.
Okay, I got a restraining order, Thomas. You're up in the Pirate Twins from the Golden Age of Wireless. All right, since we had a big of a digression, we're going to have to kind of hurry up and catch up. Back a couple quick reviews. We're talking about Netflix raising the price. Let's talk about a couple of Netflix series we actually we both knocked off.
Yeah.
Okay, the first half season of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Yes.
Finally got through that, and you watched through that. Six episodes. It was okay.
I liked it. I liked it. I give that one an enthusiastic 7.
Okay.
Definitely want to check it out.
I want to give it like a 6 or 7. It's just, it felt like it was too fractionated. It didn't have like the usual arcs of what was going on. So,
no, it was a quick watch. And when it's quick for me, that means it's entertaining. It's not going off on too many digressions like some people we know. hoisted by our own retards. I mean, petards.
Hey, now.
But, yeah, I enjoyed it, especially the, you know, the whole DJ,
DJ Finger Blast.
DJ Finger Blast.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's interesting is that this one and the next show we're talking about both did special episodes. We'll talk about that when we come back to that. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was funny, but I thought it took away too much time from Kimmy herself.
Okay. But you have an interesting milieu of side characters that, I felt that it was a nice balance.
It didn't feel like it was gelled up. It used to be that Kimmy was passing through from one to the other, and now it's like, okay, now we're going to do Titus and Jenna.
So more like a Kimmy subcompact, more like a Kimmy bus.
Well, I was happy that you brought Xanthippe back because she's hot.
Yes.
All right. Anyway.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, if you like Kimmy Schmidt, keep watching it. And, and finally, because they now have the skip intro button, I don't have to mute those opening theme song, which doesn't bother me, but Hermione just went nuts on that.
Auto-tune drives some people bats. And with my name being Otto, you know, it's kind of ironic that your name is Otto and you hate Auto-Tune.
Yes, I do. All right. And the other thing, we actually last episode, I was drawing a blank or a couple episodes ago. Yeah, Luke Cage, and then something's following the week after. And I couldn't think of what it was. What it was Glow, season 2. The Gorgeous Ladies Wrestling show. And you finished it up first and I got caught up later.
Yeah.
I liked this season. It was not as good as the first season. My problem with this season was first of all, you know, most people complain about Netflix shows being too long and drawn out. This one felt like it was missing several episodes in the middle, especially in the way they handled some of the relationships, between characters. Basically, it felt like, wait, why are these people trying to kiss now? I mean, they are hating each other and whatnot. Alison Brie's Ruth character, she's trying to make herself useful. I can't remember Betty Gilpin's characters, Debbie. She is having problems with her divorce, and there's like an episode dedicated to her basically having a breakdown and selling everything in her house for like $5. Everything must go. And it's just kind of like, what does this have to do with other stuff? And so they kept kind of taking time off to focus on each character, and it didn't feel like an ensemble thing anymore.
I thought it was rolling nicely until the point about 3/4 of the way through
episode 8,
where I felt that it was kind of veering, or not veering so much, just meandering. But it didn't take away from my enjoyment of it. But I thought it was kind of like, we're like really moving here.
The one episode that I think you're referring to, and you mentioned we were talking about it after I finished watching it, is there's an episode which is basically an entire episode of Glow, the show.
Yes.
Okay. Not the series, but the actual broadcast thing, showing the commercials, showing a telethon theme song about don't kidnap. Yeah. You know, the way the show appears on TV.
Right.
And it's like, wow, are they going to do the entire? Yes, they are. They did an entire 30-35 minute episode based on this. And I looked up some recaps and some people are going, well, this is polarizing. Some people like it. Some people are going to hate it. I'm in category B. I appreciated that they committed to the bit that hard for an entire episode. Okay.
Here's where I stand on that. There were points during the skits where I was like, you took a little, it went too long.
Sure.
That would be my main thing. It was the time thing. It wasn't the quality or the acting, because I knew exactly what they were emulating and what they were trying to present.
Sure.
It just seemed like it was being drawn a little too much.
Okay.
Drawing it out a little too much.
You know, I saw a video, guys, and I don't know how I'm going to share this because it was on Facebook. You can't really take those and embed them in show notes at cultureculturalradio.com. But somebody posted a video up of what English sports look like to non-English people. Okay. And it's three guys in sweaters and whatnot, and they're basically, it looks like a Monty Python sketch, except with fewer laughs, okay?
Right.
It's a 5.5 minute long thing that you get the joke after about 2 minutes, and then it just kind of keeps dragging
on. Yeah.
And it's, they're basically like throwing a hoop around, and then they jump over each other, and then there's like some doors, and there's a referee saying, and then there's a commentator. It's just like, it's amusing, but I mean, what I always loved about Robot Chicken is that they have a joke that, or a premise that takes 5 seconds, they will spend 5 seconds on it and they will move on to the next
thing. Exactly. Leg. And that's why it works. Because so, you see, you know, sometimes simple is best.
Sure. Anyway, back to Glow. My problem I have with, like I said, the season is that, in the early on, Ruth is trying to, you know, basically make herself useful, and she pisses off Sam, the Mark Maron character, and then, like, he's like dissing her for several episodes, and then all of a sudden they're like, you know, friendly again, and he's cool, and I'm like, wait, where'd the transition come from?
I know.
That's an issue.
Makes you think, did they take like the first 5-6 episodes?
I don't know.
Test audiences?
No. There's no test audience.
Mean, because
like
I wanted to say Mark Maron's, his portrayal, whatever you want to call it, I kind of like the evolution of his character.
Yeah. He was softening up.
But you're
like
right.
This,
the way it just came crashing down, because I thought they were budding a romance between her and the camera guy, and it was a cute sidebar.
Yeah.
But it was just like, okay, fuck you here now. You know what I mean? It just seemed like perfect example when she gets injured and they say, oh, we got her.
Okay.
Oh, well, call me and let me know how she is. That seemed to me like, did you reshoot that? Because that doesn't seem like the original idea.
Hmm.
Not built upon what we had already seen of them.
Sure. Well, anyhow, but I give it a 7 out of 10. It's, like I say, if you like the first
enthusiastic
episode,
7.
The characters are good. Everybody gets, you know, more time to show. There's a scene where Sheila's She-Wolf doesn't have her makeup on. She's like off the clock and stuff like this. And also how she deals with her fans. In fact, the fans that the show is starting to get is kind of an interesting sidebar.
Yeah.
The big deal in the first season was like, oh my God, Alison Brie is finally naked for a couple of quick scenes. Well, this season, the only nudity that matters is Betty Gilpin. Now, she'd done nudity before, like on Nurse Jackie, a little quick stuff like this, but there's one episode, one scene that, she shows up in and she's quite milfy, you know, and also she, I did not check and see if the Emmy nominations came out today. I didn't really look at it because I don't care, but I didn't see if she had been nominated or not.
Well,
the
teaser card had the glow thing. So Glow definitely got at least one nomination.
Okay.
You know, the way news services work, it's probably like for, you know, like costuming or makeup.
Well, the one thing I do know is that basically very few broadcast TV shows got nominated. It's basically all Netflix and HBO and
so
stuff like
even,
that.
So even the award ceremonies are kind of like moving towards women.
Well, no, it just goes to show that the premium services are the ones that are doing the best, you know, work.
Yeah.
And Peter Dinklage set the record for the most nominations for a supporting actor in a category. He got his 7th straight nomination for Game of Thrones. So good for him. Anyway, Kimmy is okay. If you like Kimmy, keep watching Kimmy. And Glow, a step back. But once again, it comes down to the writing.
Definitely worth watching. Good, entertaining.
Yes. Moving on to movie news now.
Wait, we have one more show that we got to give a quick shout out to.
What would that be?
Luke Cage, baby.
You watch it? I haven't. So talk about Luke Cage.
I give it a good solid 7. There is some bizarro shit going on, but it's actually pretty good. I think
how's it compared to last season? Last season was problematic because basically they killed off the good villain and then they padded out for a while.
A little bit better than last season, but I put them both about the same par. Entertaining, but definitely in a weird direction, but in a good weird direction.
Okay.
I would definitely encourage watching it. I'll give it a solid 7.
Okay. Trick it or I'll get out and when I get, I'm only halfway through.
You may disagree, but I kind of like the direction the show is going.
Okay.
The guy playing Luke Cage is definitely owning it.
This Bushmaster guy.
We get to see Rosario Dawson.
Oh, also, this is Reg Cathy's last role.
There was a very nice tribute to him at the end.
Oh, cool.
And the way they wrote the show, you're not really going to miss. You know, it was like, holy shit, man. You know what? It's not the problem that Star Wars has with Carrie Fisher. I'll put it that way.
Sure. Okay. Anyway, that's the thing that's going to be happening. Moving on to movie news now. Coming up, I don't know exactly when, but I was talking about how Christopher Nolan supervised a restoration of a 70mm Roadshow exhibition of 2001: A Space Odyssey, the most overrated movie ever. Anyway. Yeah. Well, not the most overrated, but it's one
I'm
of the.
Sorry, Dirk. I can't acknowledge this.
Yeah.
I can't encourage people to see this, Dirk.
Well, they're going to be doing a 4K video release, and that's going to be coming out. People are going to be stuff. But anyway, somebody came across some footage from an interview or from a documentary that was produced around the time they were making The Shining. And it was like never aired. And then like the footage got sold and somebody stuck it up on YouTube and it gets found and put on Reddit. It's weird how this stuff pops up. And it's actually interesting because I found the video and they were saying like, oh, the infamous, you know, 0.7 f-stop lens from Barry Lyndon.
Right.
And they show this, you know, woman in like the camera equipment thing and she hauls out this gigantic lens and stuff like this. But anyway, one of the things that came out this is that Kubrick explains the ending of 2001. Now, the thing is, I read the transcript and listened to it and I thought, I've heard this before. Okay. But basically right. what it comes down to is the aliens tried to keep him in a zoo and then evolved him. And it makes sense because the thing is the one weird bit that actually makes sense to me in the entire movie is how you see the apes and then the monolith shows up and they touch it and then suddenly they got weapons. <You know? laughs> So, you know, there's been some tinkering going on and then Prometheus came along. So anyway, I'll throw a link in the show notes for 180 where you can find out what the ending of 2001 meant. It meant taking all the acid. That's what it meant. anyway, Sony. Covering themselves in glory. Anyway, they intended to put the trailer for some movie called Kali the Killer on YouTube. Unfortunately, they accidentally posted the entire movie on the other site. I wonder what their first clue is like, man, this is taking forever to encode. Listen, no. This is the same thing that happened was when the trailer for The Mummy went out and it had none of the sound effects. It was just Tom Cruise yelling and stuff. And
it is hilarious. That well, no,
they
some
take,
of the
they, they take that one scream and they dub it on everything else too. So anyway, but you can't watch it now. They fixed it. So that's the thing that happened. Speaking of career declines, Neil Blomkamp, who started off so great with District 9, has been just plummeting from there to Elysium to Chappie and to whatever the hell he's doing now. Anyway, he's going to be making a RoboCop movie, apparently.
Why?
Because they think they can wring some money out of that franchise.
Bet it's going to be... Oh, I'm sorry. I'll bet that the RoboCop will be a strong female character.
No.
FemboCop.
FemboCop. So who knows? But anyway, so that's what Neil
Blomkamp is. Drop your pants. You are coming with me.
Idris Elba, who is not a strong female character.
Or the next James Bond.
He's going to be the villain in the Hobbs and Shaw movie for the Fast and Furious spinoff because because they want to make some Fast and Furious money with The Rock and Jason Statham and Vin Diesel is being a little bitch, you know, so they're going to make it a little spy thing, and so Idris Elba is going to be the bad guy.
Dude, the new ride at Universal, the new Fast and Furious ride at Universal Orlando takes up, probably a quarter of the space.
Wow.
I mean, when I saw that thing last year, it was huge. That's what she said. Amazing.
Nice.
But me and Otto Jr. went there last year, as we know, and the structure, it is one of the huge, I haven't seen something so big aside from when they were building Diagon Alley.
Okay.
I mean, you know, the scope and the size of the damn thing, because I was there while they were building that, too.
Sure.
And the Fast and the Furious ride enclosure
now, the thing is
the largest
that,
one I've ever seen being erected.
What would
erected.
That be, considering it's basically, you know, a movie
it is
about
a ride-through
racing.
And there's helicopters and Vin Diesel. And if you've, well, you haven't been on these simulator rides. You haven't been.
I don't
you
know.
I'm a fan of simulator rides from the beginning. I had the good fortune of going to Islands of Adventure when Spider-Man, before it opened, it was a preview ticket I got. And I was able to ride that ride before most people did. They were doing a preview thing and half the effects and stuff weren't built in, but it was still like the world's most coolest ride.
Right.
And when I rode it a couple years later with Otto Jr. when he was like 3 years old, I was like, holy fuck, it's even better.
Wow.
And they've improved it. But what I'm saying is, these things are amazing, these immersive environments that they put you in, and it's all enclosed.
Here's the problem I have. Hermione doesn't like that stuff.
Right.
Okay.
Well, then you have to wait outside for you.
The last, I'm not going to pay for the admission for her to stand
single
outside.
Single riders, you know, get right in there. I mean, cool. Bam, you don't wait.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, it comes down to the fact that last time I went to Cedar Point,
mm-hmm,
was in 1993.
That is the last place. You know what, dude? That is the last place as a theme park fan. That's the last place that I will tell anyone to go.
Really?
Because there is no good fucking time to go there anymore. They are world famous. They're the only place within a 20-state area that has at least... The next competitor has half of what they have.
Okay.
And
so basically what you're saying, you're not saying don't go there because it sucks. You're saying don't go there because it's always crowded.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the only game in town. It's fucking awesome.
I thought you were about to say, like, awesome. Cedar Point sucks because it's, you know, Cedar Point.
Okay.
So anyway, Idris Elba. So anyway, also speaking about movie tickets, MoviePass. It's not an episode of the show with MoviePass news.
Christ, are we done with this thing yet?
Well,
three bells from MoviePass.
What was interesting is how NerdWriter did a thing, I think this week, about how MoviePass doesn't work. But basically what the point is that it may work once they get a critical mass of people,
right.
But you know, the thing is they need to get more and more people.
Right.
And that theaters aren't doing it. Also, theaters are starting their own sort of deal. Like AMC introduced the thing, I think we talked about in the last show.
Yeah, Freaking Watchers Club.
And stuff like this.
Love my MJR Awards card.
Yeah.
Because do you know how much it cost me to buy snacks for Otto Jr. at the last movie?
What's that?
Zero.
Cool. Well, here's the thing. Going on Tuesdays. Thing is, you know, go on Tuesdays,
right?
But Tuesdays, all shows are $5, and you get free popcorn.
Really?
Yep.
So when you walk out, do they go, see you next Tuesday?
It's Wednesday in the Landis movies.
Oh,
so anyway,
but I mean, if it was on Tuesdays, you'd say, see you next Tuesday.
Ah, got it. Gotcha. Okay. Alrighty.
You get there.
No, they don't.
I knew you'd get there.
But they don't. All right. So anyway, but they've introduced surge pricing. And peak thing. So basically now.
So do you get the lamb twist with that?
So, no.
So button up your shirt. You got the hairy chest. You look like an animal.
What you do. This is not sexy. This is an animal.
But, you like a lamb twist?
Oh, God. And they gave Bronson Pinchot a series off of that. You know, it's like there are no small parts, but
it's
come on.
So ridiculous.
You know? Oh, gosh. So.
Cousin Durkee.
Yeah, but what's he been doing since? All right, so
the Meepo shuffle.
So anyhow, what they're doing is, like, if you want to go see like a peak show time, they may charge you $2 to $4 more for your
they
ticket.
Peep
you
shows
know?
Now? Oh, peak show.
Yes. So anyway, our friend Parsons, who has the movie pass, you know, they're changing it constantly, so they're adding it in. But once again, when they're losing money, basically, if you go more than one movie a month, you're going to lose money. You know,
right.
They're doing what they're doing. So once again, it's the market working itself out.
Capitalism.
Speaking about capitalism, some things: home video releases. They're going to be showing at Comic-Con, Deadpool 2 Super Duper Cut. So they're going to have an extended cut. They're going to be showing there, and it's coming to home video.
So that can make my 10, like Otto Jr. actually said to me after the last movie we saw and every other one, 11.
11. Okay, we have not talked about it because we've always run out of time and I've always kicked it off.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Deadpool a couple days later,
mm-hmm,
okay, after we saw it and reviewed it, because we never came back and did it. Did we do a full spoiler review?
I think by the time we got to it, we did.
We did, but I didn't talk about why I only gave it a 7 and I stuck at a 7. Since we're bringing it up, let's talk about it right now. Let's clear this off the spindle. Here's my fundamental problem with Deadpool 2. Full spoilers, because now we're into the home video phase. First of all, fridging Vanessa, it's like, oh, come on. Okay, that was bad, even though they found a way to wind it back at the mm-hmm. ending. Okay.
Right.
But that was too dark an opening. It cast a pall over the whole thing.
Really?
The references I found to be problematic. Okay, just the fourth wall breaking seemed forced this time around. It wasn't like bad, but basically I just found the tone to be darker.
Okay.
The next fundamental problem is they don't really explain how the kid became this future guy who kills Cable's family. Okay. Now I see the point that he was tortured and abused and he acted out nastily and this and that. So why is he in the future killing people and Cable's family? That was missing.
They kind of hit that, but you got to kind of be paying attention. I noticed it by accident.
Okay. Here is the biggest problem. In fact, this struck, I'm surprised I didn't catch this the first time, the second time I went, because Hermione and I were talking about it. She pretty much agreed the same thing. It was a little too dark and mean. Here's the fundamental problem. You have a house full, a building, a school of orphan mutants, okay, who are being tortured and abused by this cruel headmaster and his lackey minions, okay? Right. And they're doing this and that. When Charles Xavier is the world's most powerful telepath, who is a machine that can spot every mutant in the world, and he didn't know about this, okay? Because they talk about, after they destroy the school, it's like, we'll take the kids back to, you know, we'll take the kids from the orphanage back to the school. And I'm like, realized, how did the school exist under Charles' nose for all this time and all these things? Because, I mean, this should have been caught, and then thus we don't have a movie because Cable's not coming back.
So right.
That was my big thing.
If I may,
go ahead.
As someone who's read the canon and knows it backwards, forwards, upside down.
You're doing the bring the books thing in. Okay.
No, just as someone who knows the story and how it goes. Okay. If you have the technology to shut down mutant powers, you can shut out mutant powers.
Well, yeah, you Magneto's know, helmet sorry. And stuff like that.
Right.
But
it's just another version of the shield. It's just another block. It's, you know, you can have 2 minutes of exposition as to why it's blocked, but it's blocked. Did they go into great detail about how the adamantium was infused into Wolverine's armor? Or did they just say, we have a process, we're going to give it to you, not many have survived, you may.
But but the thing is, like, coating his bones.
That's all you would need in this movie is, we've developed a way to keep you know who out of this.
Okay. But
I think there may have been there were so many references, and I like the way it jumped around. But I will say this, you would have to be a fan of the canon and history and have deep rooted knowledge to actually enjoy it the way I did. Because to me, I was just like, I was too busy having a good time to pick apart things like that because I was having so much fun with it.
Okay.
I was enjoying it, and I didn't mind the fact that I was like, yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that was my problem with Deadpool. I found it to be too dark. And then, like I said, the plot holes about the kid and stuff like this.
Comedy offset the darkness just fine. Cable, the ultimate expositional character. I'm here to kill him because he fucking killed my family.
Right. Sure.
And Josh Brolin, man. Three bells, man's money.
All right. Well, anyway, he'll be on digital on August 7th and disc still give it the 21st. 10.
Now, okay. After your second viewing, did it affect your score?
No, it changed. It was unchanged. Unchanged. It was 7 before, it was 7 afterwards, okay. and I was able to analyze.
Because the real test will be when you pirate it and give it to me. I mean, if someone pirates it and gives it to me and I still laugh and love it.
Sure. Let's put it this way. They did the brilliant thing by having the best post-credit sequence or end-credits thing sort of thing.
That was one of the main reasons.
You fix everything, you send them out laughing, and you forget the fact that you were bummed out for the most of the movie because, you know, basically he's trying to die.
Yeah, so I wasn't bummed. You saw me, Vanessa. Dude. I was laughing the whole time.
I'm just speaking for myself.
Right. But for myself, you do remember. You were sitting next to me.
You loved it.
I was laughing like a fucking madman.
Like a madman. What's the madman drinking tonight?
Autopilot.
I'm drinking Labatt Ice.
Very heavy autopilot. I got a 800-pound autopilot.
Right? Cool. Anyway, speaking of death, Criterion has announced a gigantic Ingmar Bergman Criterion set. 39 movies, 30 hours of extras, 248 page book of essays about every movie in the set. New restorations of some of the movies. Some are first available for the first time on Blu-ray. 16 titles, I think, have never been offered by Criterion before. And it's only 30 disc and comes in a big slipcase. And also it's organized not in disc chronologically, but they basically have made it like a film festival with double features every night and
holy
opening and closing.
Shit, up. Really?
$400 list price, but if you go to Criterion, it's only $240. So
that is definitely a film buff. I would highly recommend picking that up.
if you, the thing is, I've never seen any Ingmar Bergman films. No.
Neither have I.
Stuff. But the thing is, it's almost like, and they did a Kurosawa box set also with, mm-hmm. with a ton of stuff. But I mean, it's like, and I guess it doesn't have every single movie
I've
of
seen
his.
Seven
but
Samurai.
It's like, but, anyway, but yeah, I mean, when you look at it, it's like, God, 39 movies for, you know, I mean, it goes back to 19. God, the, Seventh Seal with Max von Sydow.
Yep.
Was 1957 mm-hmm. or 59? I'm like, wait, how old is Sydow? Because he was in Force Awakens. He's 90 years old.
He was an old man when he did The Exorcist in 1973.
He wasn't that old.
What,
no.
He looked
sure
like
no. He's 90. He was 45, and Dick Smith did the visual effects, yep. and he had to age him up.
Yep.
He had to age
now,
him up.
Dick Smith.
But the thing
three
is,
three bells for him.
Oh yeah,
the guy's that genius. That man was amazing. He
nine fingers of genius.
Mm-hmm. Totally one of the best makeup men.
Oh yes. Anyhow, anyway, so that's I know if you're a movie lover or you know a movie lover and you want to drop some serious coin, that's
like
a good
to
way
do.
To go.
I'd love to see some Bergman films and see. Oh my God, this movie stole this. You know what I mean? You could watch all these movies and you'll be watching them and going, wow, so and so took this for that.
I sent that over to a friend of mine and I said, I go, hey, check out, the set. And he goes, God, how many movies did Max von Sydow make with him? I go, a lot, obviously, you know, but not all. And there's another guy. In fact, his early movies have a bunch of stuff that, were from somebody.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is like, well, how many movies have Leo or Bobby done with Scorsese?
Right.
So I stopped and looked it up. De Niro's done 6 movies with Scorsese. Leo's done 9. Reverse. Leo's done 6. Bobby's done 9.
See, I would have gone the other way. I would have said Leo did more than De Niro.
It seemed like he did 3 movies in a row. He did Gangs of New York, The Aviator, and The Departed. Mm-hmm. Bang, bang, bang. That was like his 3 movies in a row that Leo made, okay? Were all Scorsese movies.
Right.
And whatnot. De Niro was in Mean Streets,
Taxi Driver,
Raging Bull, King of Comedy.
I forget King of Comedy. I love that movie too.
Yeah.
Sandra Bernhardt is so
Jerry Lewis is, and Sandra Bernhardt, yes.
Yes.
Masha.
She should have got an Oscar for that.
I can't speak to that, but I just remember she was cool in that.
It was so original. It was something I'd never seen. I'd never seen an actor or a performer because I despised her. You know, her mainstream persona was just so like, ugh. But when I saw her in that movie, I was like, wow, that's good.
Sure. And let's see, what else did he do? Cape Fear, Goodfellas, Casino. He's in The Irishman coming up. He's been in, I know.
You just keep ringing his bell.
Yep. All right. Anyway,
that's going on. Other way.
But speaking of home video, one thing that's problematic, and I kind of noticed this in the recent, I've been buying like digital movies. I bought Thor Ragnarok and Black Panther on digital mm-hmm. 4K. And granted, the setup in the hangar here is not optimal, but I have a fairly decent Atmos setup, yes. and it should be okay.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem that impressive. Well, anyway, apparently Disney's having a problem with their audio on their home releases. And there was an article in Forbes, someone named John Archer wrote this. He says, hey, Disney, what's going on with your Star Wars and Marvel mixes? And basically they're saying, because the thing is, Disney used to be like the gold standard for transfers, and they used to have really good sound. But apparently there's been a lot of complaints about the recent Marvel movies and Star Wars movies. Well, Last Jedi was the first 4K Star Wars movie that came out. But people have been complaining about the audio quality, that the scores sound thin. The sound effects
aren't
punchy.
Is this in the theater or on the transfer for home use?
On the home disc. Because movies that sound really rocking out in theaters, they're not transferring home. And there's a question like, well, it's supposed to be Dolby Atmos. So, and people are theorizing that maybe they're doing a pre-rendered Atmos as opposed to actual object based. I'm like, what's the mm-hmm. point of that? That's, it'd be like, down mixing just because. And the thing is, and this is interesting because one of the things that was announced, I don't know if I mentioned on the last show, but Apple is finally going to add bit streaming and Atmos support to the Apple TV 4K.
You did mention that.
So anyway, but the thing is, it's taking them a year from the introduction of this damn box to do this. Okay.
Right.
I mean, I have a lot of movies on iTunes because I buy cheap codes, but the thing is, it has the worst audio. It doesn't even have Dolby mm-hmm. Digital Plus. It's just Dolby Digital.
Right.
Okay. Now, they're in beta. I'm waiting for the finished version. It'll be out in a couple months. It'll get here when it gets here.
Right.
But the thing is, though, is that people are thinking, well, why did Apple, stint on? I mean, it's the only box that does Dolby Vision and HDR10. though Xbox One S and X are going to be having Dolby Vision on at least Netflix coming soon. It's in the alpha channel right now. So if you're okay. one of those people, so things are improving and there's more options. But, you know, once again, there's a whole bunch of hardware involved. I don't want to digress on that.
May I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Do you think they're devoting more time and energy into the picture presentation?
Because
the visuals, from what I've seen, are amazing.
Well, here's the thing. In fact, some people were criticizing those, like even the transfers aren't good. Though I've seen, you know, I've seen people say, well, say what you will about The Last Jedi as a movie, it looks great. But I've seen people on some of the boards I'm in complaining about the quality there. I haven't seen the 4K version because unless I can find it for $5 somehow, and it'll never be $5, you know, unless I get a code.
$5 is too much.
You know,
just my opinion, but I understand where you're coming
from. Listen, the fact that I haven't bought in any form, this is the first Star Wars movie I've not, like, gone out and bought new.
You know,
okay.
Now that's telling.
So that's, yeah, I mean, you know, I just, if I could get the master files and then cut it down, you know, that sort of stuff. So anyway, but yeah, I'll throw the link to this stuff here, but you know, oh, the theory was that Apple was like, well, they figure that people are just watching on TV speakers or soundbars, so they don't need this stuff. I'm like, listen, people will spend $10,000-$20,000 on, you know, gigantic surround systems and, you know, stuff that I'm like, that'd be nice, but man, I'm not spending that kind of money.
Right.
And they do this and
you
it's
put
like,
a very nice system together. When we watched Atomic Blonde, it was the whole package. It was the whole thing. It wasn't just the visuals. It was the sound as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So yes, there are people who care.
You know, and it can be done on a budget too.
Yes,
so
right.
Anyway, I don't know, but the thing is, once again, though, you know, they're cutting corners, and the thing is, listen, if you want people to buy home video versions, you got to give them the best quality you can.
Right.
And there's no excuse for it not to be, because Dolby Atmos has been around as a format for a few years.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got plenty of regular Blu-rays that have it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what is the hang up?
No, you've shown me exactly the difference, and it is amazing. There's no other way I can put it.
Yeah. So anyway, they're botching that stuff up. All right. Well, gosh, we've been running really long and crazy. So when we come on back, we're going to do some quick movie reviews. And boy, I'm going to have to shuffle around the set a little bit. We'll come back with Ant-Man and the Wasp and whatnot. But first, we're going to take a break. Let's see. What do I want to play from Thomas Dolby now? Let's go with, since we're probably going to just be the second break, I'm going to go with a song off of The Flat Earth. And I know I've played this in the past, so I couldn't seem to find it in the show notes. This is Hyperactive, the song. This song rocks, and it's super cool.
Otto's theme song.
All right. Well, anyway, we will be back, and we're going to talk about Ant-Man and Jurassic World. And I feel pretty, because Amy Schumer gets some love.
Jurassic World feels pretty?
Yes, it does. Because we're the Culture Vultures, and this is Podcast Detroit.
Tell me about your childhood.
At the tender age of three, I was hooked to a machine just to keep my mouth from spouting junk. Must have took me for a fool, cause they chucked me out of school, cause the teacher knew I had the fun. But tonight I'm on the edge, that has chucked me in the fridge, cause I'm burning up. I'm burning up. With the vision in my brain, and the music in my veins, and the dirty rhythm in my blood.
Yeah. bench and your headphones. You can turn it up. I'm the shape in your back room. I'm the breather on the phone. And I'm burning up. But there's one thing I must say, before they lock me up again. You'd be safer at the back. When I'm having a
Electro rock with a trombone solo. Nice.
Thomas Can Dolby. Trombone get any better than that?
Unless Riker's playing it? No.
Ah, nice.
Alrighty then. Anyway, movie time, review time. Quick thing kicking off. Movie that you were never, ever, ever going to see. But I was kind of like, okay, I watched it with the missus. I Feel Pretty, Amy Schumer's movie. And
I Feel Pretty.
So basically what this is Shallow Hal, where both Jack Black and Gwyneth Paltrow are the same character. Amy Schumer is a slightly Zaftig woman who is having self-esteem issues, and she hangs out with her friends, Adi Bryant, and a almost unrecognizable with brown hair, Busy Phillips, is as her pals, and they're not getting any dates and whatnot. And she works in the online division of a cosmetics company called Lily LeClaire that was founded by Lauren Hutton, playing there, but it's being run by Lauren Hutton's granddaughter, Michelle Williams. Okay.
With what?
Yes. And she's got this long wig, and she speaks in this baby breathy voice that, like, I couldn't even hear her. I had to keep turning up the volume, which was the joke. But it's weird to see Michelle Williams doing this sort of stuff. And with the blonde hair and stuff, I could almost think that the direction she was given is play Anne Hathaway in the Alice in Wonderland movies, but stupid. and that's what she's like. Well, anyway, as the trailer gives away, Amy Schumer hits her head, and basically she wishes that she was, you know, pretty and hot, you know, like all the girls in the Soul Cycle class. Anyway, she falls and hits her head, and she looks in the mirror, and she is beautiful. What they do that is smart is they never show what you see, what she is seeing. So it's not like there's a reflection in the mirror where she's a supermodel or anything
right,
like this.
So not like Shallow Hal where the morbidly obese whale looks like Gwyneth Paltrow.
Nope. You only see how she reacts. And, you know, a lot of people have problems with Amy
Schumer. Do they do the turnabout where we see what she sees?
No. That's my whole point.
Where you can see other people's true selves? No.
Basically,
so she
looks in the mirror and she goes, oh my God, I'm hot.
Yeah.
And everyone's looking at her like, what? You're exactly the same as you were before. And so, but anyway, she becomes, you know, a combination of very self-confident, but also kind of an arrogant bitch and alienating people and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, later on, she loses the power, and then, but she learns that beauty is inside or whatever. Anyway, it's a sweet movie. She gives a good performance. She sells, you know, the transformation of this and that. It's got some funny, actually some of the funniest stuff are the side characters. She meets a guy, and then there's one little sequence where she enters a bikini contest, and it's like, she doesn't have a bikini. So she like basically rolls up her shirt and rolls up her jeans, you know, to make them like, you know, Daisy Dukes and stuff like this. And she pours water and is dancing around the stage. And, you know, does she win? Care to guess?
I'm scared.
Well, anyway.
I'm
so anyway, it's a predictable disposable movie.
That's
but it's
a bad
it's,
touch.
It's fair.
I'm at a point where the movie hurt me.
Well, anyway, I give it a 6 out of 10. Catch it on cable. It's fine. It's fine. It's well performed.
You know what?
It's
you know what? You can show up at any dance club at closing time, and you might just see a bit of that.
Okay.
That's all I'm gonna say.
All right. Hopefully.
Very, very scared.
Hopefully the processing I do will not cut out your voice.
Pray it doesn't look at you.
All right. Anyway, yeah, it's cute and whatnot, but who cares? Now we both saw Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah.
The rockin' sequel to Ant-Man. Yeah.
I thought the Wasp was a very boring person. You know, I was like, hello, I'm Clint, and this is my wife, Phoebe. These are our children, and we live in a modest two-story brownstone. We each have a car, and we're professionally educated. Oh, I'm sorry.
Not that Wasp. Not that one at all. Anyway, Ant-Man and the Wasp. Yeah. Evangeline Lilly gets her own suit and whatnot. It's 2 years after.
Can I say I'm going to check my privilege right here and go, her ass looks fucking amazing in that suit.
Well, I'm sure there's something padded
she
in there.
She is painfully dual.
She's cute. Well, listen, the thing that I think, and then when I first saw the first photos from the set, I'm like, oh, cool. Her hair's not that jacked up, bangs thing,
And wash that elf taste out of your mouth.
I haven't seen those movies, so I don't
know. Neither have I, but you've seen enough to know.
Yeah.
She is hot.
Yes, she's very cute. Very Canadian. But anyway, so what's happening is Scott has been on house arrest after the events of Civil War.
Scott!
He's got a few days left on his sentence, but he's having visions and stuff like this, and he needs the help, Hank, and
the vision wasn't in this movie. I'm just kidding. Sorry.
We don't have time. let's just talk about the politics of this movie. But anyway, what happens is hijinks ensue. The FBI is going to catch him and throw him in prison for 20 years if they catch him on the outside when he's running around turning into Giant Man and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But the whole point is they're trying to get Janet Van Dyne, who shrank into the quantum realm, because they can't use the term microverse. Apparently someone else has the rights to that.
Ah, so that's why you're wondering about that.
That's why you're not going to get Micronauts. You're going to get
motherfucker.
So anyway, apparently that memo did not make it to.
He's got weapons of mass bullshit.
I'm gonna blow that horn a second goddamn motherfucking time.
Bullshit! Bullshit!
Motherfucker! That was. You were waiting. You were holding that in reserve, weren't you?
Because
you knew how excited I was about that.
I thought you knew.
I thought it was perfect. No, I didn't. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. Please continue.
I'm almost afraid to tell you something else is coming up later in the show. Okay.
That's okay.
All right. Well, anyway, meanwhile, antagonist for this movie, because the villains, I don't know if they even qualify as villains.
No.
Walt Goggins, shows up as a guy they've been buying parts for their quantum tunnel from. And I'm not quite sure what his deal is. And then
he's playing the male version of the transvestite hooker from Breaking Bad. That's what I got from enjoyable. I love him.
Where was there a transvestite hooker in Breaking Bad?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sons of Anarchy. Sons of Anarchy. I'm so sorry. Okay. He's so great. He's money in everything he does.
Okay.
But, all I could think of was brother of, how was it? Winona or something, but
I haven't watched Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah. Great fucking character.
And then there's Ghost,
my cat.
Yes, a trans-dimensional chick.
She's just about as mean. If my fucking cat had that problem, she would probably be just as mean.
And I'd never get her out of the basement here. So, anyway, she is phasing in and out, and there's hijinks ensue. You also get to meet some people who Hank has screwed over in the past. So, anyway.
Lawrence Fishburne.
As Goliath. And so,
Black Goliath.
So anyway, it's a minor MCU movie. After the heaviness of the heaviness of Infinity War. And Black Panther, the seriousness of that.
Yeah.
This is like the first Ant-Man movie. It's light. Michael Pena is funny as hell.
Totally money. Three bells for Michael Pena. How they got to his explain everything scene in this movie was really good.
Yeah, we're not going to give you any spoilers.
But it was really good. I liked it because I was wondering how they were going to tackle that, and I really liked how they did.
Yeah, it was cool. So anyway, basically, if you like the first one, you'll like this one. The action is fairly decent.
Effects and action scenes. The effects were very good in this
movie. Saw it in 3D, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't. So, but, the thing that, I have a problem with though is that they had a lot of big moments in the trailer. Okay. Yeah. And it's like, come on, people, you know, you're giving away gags and this stuff. We know what they're going on, you know,
there were a couple of things that they really could have left out of the trailer that really would have popped in the movie itself.
And here's the thing. First of all, people are like, well, what's going on with Infinity War? They explain where it ties in with Infinity War more or less with the mid-credit sequence. The end-credit sequence, they gave away in the trailer. You don't have to stay for the credits. Watch the mid-credit sequence, then take off. The end-credit sequence is utterly superfluous.
Both Otto Jr. and I were both, we liked it, but we were looking at each other like, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, subverting expectations.
Yeah. So anyway.
God, I hate that term. I give both of those terms.
I give it a 7 out of 10, matinee. How about you?
Otto Jr. gives it an 11, as usual, but he really enjoyed it. And there were a few times that both he and I looked at each other and went, ooh. So I'm going to raise it to an 8.
Oh, you're going with an 8.
A solid 8. Okay. Not enthusiastic, but a solid 8. Because it really was enjoyable. It didn't let me down. And at the very least, it kept moving.
Yeah.
And Michael Pena.
Yeah, he's good.
And Evangeline Lilly's butt.
Good. She,
she looks great in that suit.
Michelle Pfeiffer's looking awesome. She's like 92 years old now, and she still looks hot.
The de-aging is going to just... When is this bomb going to just fucking go poof?
Well, here's the big test, because apparently they're going to be de-aging Samuel L. Jackson in Captain Marvel for the
and
whole Coulson movie.
And Coulson as well. Yes.
I don't know how much Coulson they're going to have. Well, he's going to have hair.
Joey, my friend. They're de-aging both of them. He's all excited about it. Well, we both love Coulson.
Sure. Absolutely.
And I'm almost done with the last season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so stay tuned, kids.
How are you digging that?
I like it. Going in a bunch of different directions, but I like the twists and turns. I'll wait until I finish it, and I'll give a complete.
Sure thing. All right. So anyway, so you're up to an 8 on that. Okay. Now, finally, we're going to spend the next 10 minutes listening to me scream about, and this, I was going to actually, we as a policy, if you are just discovering us now, you made it this far in the show. We have a policy of no spoilers for the first 2 weeks. But the thing is that we had taped, before I got sick, I was going to break that rule because I wanted to beat to death.
Yeah.
Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, or as I call it, Jurassic Mansion.
Which I liked. Sequel. I really liked how you did that.
Now, the thing is that you, from the trailers, did not want to see this movie.
Nope.
I was reluctant, and then, like, the last trailer looked less horrible, but I was basically going because Hermione wanted to see it because she loves the movies. Now, quick thing.
She'll swat you if you don't.
The night before we went and saw it, I rewatched the first Jurassic World, okay? Mm-hmm. And I like Jurassic World. I give it a 7 out of 10. It's stupid in so many ways, but the action scenes and set pieces were executed fairly well, even though what motivates them is stupid. Okay. And I mean, I really noticed it because I was drove me crazy. Mm-hmm. It's like the scene when the Indominus Rex is like fakes him out and they go into the cage. First of all, why does she have to drive back to the control base? Why don't she just call on the fucking phone? To get her out of there. Secondly, they're like, you think it might have jumped out? I think something that large would have been noticed if it had gotten on the outside of the cage because it would have started eating people already.
Mm-hmm.
Dumb stuff like this. The whole sequence where, like, you're using non-lethals, they're going to get killed, okay? What would have been so much better is, like, yeah, okay, let's switch to the real guns, and then they still get wiped out. You can still have the same result, but at least they shows that they tried to put a fight instead of just being idiots like that.
Rewatchability of that movie is absolute zero. The more you watch that movie, the more pissed off you get, the more the happy little, you know, homages and fan shout outs.
And the thing
mean less.
Yeah.
You know, it does. And to me, you know, sometimes you have to look at that, the rewatchability. Can you watch it again and again?
Sure.
Because they're so concerned. It's not the initial dollar, but word of mouth that plays to
people
that.
Sell it by the videos.
I have had no desire. I've seen the movie 3 times.
Okay.
And the third time, I pretty much shut it off halfway through.
Okay.
Going,
okay.
Well, not even worth staying for the end.
I hadn't watched all the way through, but anyway, so here's the problem with that. So I watched it again, dumb and this and that. So right. I'm fresh coming off of this. I go into Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Now, you had seen a full spoiler review because it opened overseas before. Yeah. And you're like, and you sent it to me. I'm like, oh no, I want to go in cold. So right. I went in fairly cold about this.
But I remember I said it was everything I thought.
Yeah.
Well, pretty much.
The thing is, you're looking for confirmation that you would hate it. I'm about to deliver to you everything, but you've seen how bad it was. You've already read all the spoiler reviews.
And stuff I like was this. Hoping I was wrong.
Sure. Okay. Well, anyway, here's the thing.
Okay.
First of all, this movie is so utterly contemptuous of the audience. I have not been this angry about a movie since Pacific Rim. Okay. Ooh. And I'll throw a link to the show notes back. This
you didn't tell me that.
5 years ago.
I'm going to sit back.
I mentioned to you. 5 years ago, I did a half hour rant about Pacific Rim on a show called Nerd Rage Against the Machine. And I'll throw the link up. This is back when McHayton was the co-host, the co-founding Vulture, and we were doing the show live. Okay. This movie is not just stupid. It's offensively and aggressively stupid. Okay. We're going full spoilers, by the way, because it's right. outside the two. It's been 3 week.
Right.
So the first thing I noticed right off the bat is that all they're doing is they're lazily checking off all the crap you expect to see in a Jurassic Park movie. Oh, they're going to be running along the field with a stampede of dinosaurs. Oh, there's going to be a gag about objects in the mirror are closer than they're supposed to be. Oh, they're going to be hiding behind something and then the dinosaurs on the other side and the camera's going to pan around that started off with the velociraptors in the kitchen in the first movie and they've repeated in every damn movie ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They do that here again. And again, especially when you're watching it again, the characterizations, if you thought the Bryce Dallas Howard and Star-Lord guys were trite and forced, they don't even freaking try in this movie, okay?
I think someone called them Osgood Thunderguns.
That's half in the bag, I think. Either them or there was one other review I saw that did that too. Yeah. Oh, and then I think it was Dishonored Wolf called the new characters diversity hires.
Diversity hires.
Millennial diversity hires.
Yes.
Because
she was late
when
the lady. I can't remember her name, so she's the lady.
Okay.
So Bryce Dallas Howard is the lady. Minority diversity hires.
The goth girl, and then there's the black nerd computer guy. And their traits are she is spicy and stuff. The thing is that she was on the originals, and I thought she looks vaguely familiar. She's kind of hot. She's hotter than the originals, but anyway, character annoying. Guy, all he does is shriek, and then he hacks the thing.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing that you're thinking about, the whole let's rescue the dinosaurs from the island, is only the first half hour of the movie. That's the ultimate bait and switch. And the thing is, this entire movie could have been condensed down to the first 40 minutes of what they want to make, which will be the next Jurassic World movie. The whole purpose of this movie, if you have not seen it, and this is what pisses me off the most, okay, is while the Nerd Rangers are just happy dancing that Solo bombed, we're going to get rid of Kathleen Kennedy, we showed Star Wars is broken, we're getting revenge for The Last Jedi.
Right.
Solo was a good movie, okay, and it bombed, and Star Wars is in trouble because of it.
Right.
Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, or as I call it, Jurassic Mansion, as I'll get to. This motherfucking thing has made over $1 billion. So the next one is definitely coming anyway, but it's making a lot of money. Okay.
Right.
And the thing is like, okay, people, this is why we can't have nice things, because you are giving your money to garbage. Oh, The Incredibles 2 is making a ton of money, and that was disappointing, which is going to be my wrap up.
May I interject this one thing?
Sure.
Otto Jr. and I were having a spirited discussion about Site A and Site B. And I said, well, there's another island. Why are they worried about this one? I said, what about Site B? This is Site B. And I said, dude, are you sure? I thought this was Site A. And we got in the whole Isla Sorna versus Isla Nublar debate. What island is
Isla Nublar, the first island.
Right.
Because in Jurassic World, they make a point about how the gate is the same gate as it was from Jurassic Park.
Right.
Also, this is Site B,
this island is.
No.
It's Site A.
It's Site A. Because remember in Jurassic World when the kids go and they have to fix the Jeep?
They're in Site A.
Yes, they're on Jurassic Park. They found the original Jurassic Park.
Right.
You
so know, that's
stuff
A.
like this. It's overgrown by jungle.
What about Site B? And he's like, well, Site B is. And I'm like,
no
dude, Why are they going to rescue dinosaurs
and
when they're Site B?
Well, no, the thing, well, Site B, not even just the whole point. Oh, also the whole thing, the reason that they're going supposedly to get the rescue of dinosaurs. Well, the volcano is going along. Well, should we save them or should we let them go extinct? Oh, well, we need to save. And their reasoning for not letting them go extinct is because, well, children have lived in a world where they have dinosaurs and we can't go away. Listen, you guys have the technology to run off dinosaurs at fucking will. It wasn't like this is the only lab that you could do this sort of stuff at. As a result, it's like, okay, so these ones all die. You make some more dinosaurs. These aren't unique things.
And people who don't believe that?
Thou shalt not bullshit!
So the premise is bullshit from the start, okay?
What the fuck?
I gotta tell you, man, the half in the bag video, I'll throw this in the show notes, and the pitch meeting are spot on. Okay, so anyway...
Okay, so
okay, well, back to the checklist. Okay, now I'm going to extend the end of the show because I'm rolling. Okay,
okay,
don't get in my way. Don't stop me now. All right, here's the thing. Okay, what else do they have that are checking off boxes? Oh, let's have the hunters from the Lost World movie. You know, and they're like, oh, we're the mercenaries and we're going to be mean to the dinosaurs. Okay, so we're just, you know, bunch of freaking meatheads with guns. Okay, so anyway. They rescue the ones that they need. They get Blue, and everybody escapes from the island just in time. Let's not even go into the whole peristaltic flow. pyroclastic flow. Pyroclastic flow. Peristaltic, that's people throwing up. Anyway, the fact that, you know, the people are pointing out, it's like, well, no, he'd be burned to death. That's 1,800 degrees. He would die, you know? So never mind the bullshit of that sequence, okay? So they get off the island and then they get to the mainland. They don't go to the next thing over. Why? Because the evil assistant of James Cromwell's character, who is like a partner of John Hammond.
Who we never knew about.
Yeah, exactly. Who has just been conjured out of things and stuff like this. He has the cane. They bring the dinosaurs back to a mansion. So basically they can be auctioned off to a bunch of Steven Seagal movie villains. Okay. Basically Croatian crime lords and Russian oligarchs and this and that. Cause
I want the dinosaur with his teeth.
So they auction this whole thing off and they got Toby Jones doing this. And some people have pointed out, well, yeah, they obviously made him look like Trump. It's like, okay. Oh, also there's a bunch of cheap political shots crammed in there. First of all, on the crawl at the bottom of the screen is right. They have a thing. President says he doesn't believe in dinosaurs. I'm like, oh dear God, really? Are we doing this? And then later on, the soldier guy goes, oh, nasty woman, referring to Bryce Dallas Howard. Oh God, really? You know, it's like you're being offensive and stupid already. Now you're just going to be politically offensive and stupid. So yeah, we're coughing and stuff like this. Anyway. As the umbrage breaks loose the secretions in our lungs.
I can't swallow this tripe.
Okay. So anyway, so what they do is they sail the boat back from off of Costa Rica in like about a day to Northern California.
It's where one day for, you know, when you have a hydro boat.
Yeah.
Cobra!
Which they don't have. So anyway, so they miraculously go up there, and then they're able to unload all their trucks full of dinosaurs and take them up into the woods of Northern California because shut up. All right. So anyway,
the Ewoks live.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, they drive past the Ewoks. No, they don't. So anyway, they go up there and they are going to have this auction with the Steven Seagal villains. Okay. Mm. And what's going on? Well, anyway, so the evil guy is doing this. And then here's the thing. And I swear to God, in fact, one review actually used the video from the movie I was thinking of. So when James Cromwell discovers that the dinosaur has been brought there to be sold and that his assistant is evil, he says, I want you to go and get the phone and call the police on yourself. And I said, I actually leaned over Hermione and go, this guy did not see Gladiator, did he? And, at which point the guy smothers James Cromwell with a pillow. Okay. Because this is the thing. I've always hated Gladiator, but the one thing I always hated about this was when Richard Harris goes to Joaquin Phoenix and says, you're not a good man. You're a bad person. So I'm going to make Russell Crowe the guy. Yeah. And you're killing me. Okay. Why?
Oh, and I'm left all alone here with just me and you so that you can kill my frail decaying body and I don't have my centurions around me to keep you from committing patricide.
So anyhow, so this happened. Okay, and then there's a running theme going around. There's this little girl, okay, and she wants to see a picture of her mother, okay, and this is like Okay, this is obviously going to mean something.
So this is where you hear a character. The opening tones from Danzig's mother.
So
no?
No, you hear the opening theme of Orphan Black because she's a clone. And the thing that's so funny is that when they come up with this detail, it's the clone of James Cromwell's daughter who died in a crash. So he cloned the daughter and raised her as a granddaughter.
What?
Okay. And she finds out and she takes it really well for a 10-year-old or something. So anyway.
Well, she is a clone, don't you?
Here's the thing. Sidebar. So Hermione goes, you know what would been cool is if they'd like been splicing dino DNA with the girl and she could like think and control them. And I stop and I go, here's the thing. That would be actually a bridge too far for the people in the audience. They'd be sitting there like, oh, that couldn't happen. You're watching a movie about dinosaurs, okay? Dinosaurs which have been genetically brought back from extinction.
I want to see Chris Pratt's
bot! And stuff like this, and then nothing, yeah. Okay? So
one half wants to see Bryce Dallas Howard's tits. The other half wants to see Chris Pratt's butt. You know, so that's how you get passengers. And look how well that worked out.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, and the whole thing, everything goes kaflooey and people get killed and stuff like this. And everything's super easy, barely an inconvenience in getting
really?
Out. And the movie
did the dinosaurs escape?
And here's they get led out by the little clone girl.
Super easy, barely an inconvenience.
And they run around doing this. Now here's the thing though.
Running around doing it is tight.
The whole point is that, you know, oh no, now there's dinosaurs amok. And as the pitch meeting said, they point out, it's like, well, they've shown that they can be killed by bullets, right? Yeah. And because that was what I said to Hermione, I go, well, we know we can shoot them. So you just arm up the army with a bunch of 50 caliber Browning guns and you go and you shoot these bastards and your movie is over.
But what happens when the Mosasaurus gets loose? How does he get loose? His lake is in the middle of the island.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I didn't have a chance to notice that because the thing is, the show was unexpectedly crowded and people sat down next to Hermione and she wanted to move over. So I missed half of that sequence while we are rearranging our seating. So anyway, the whole movie is literally just an excuse to get people, the dinosaurs off the island onto the mainland for Jurassic World 3, Dinos in America, you know, cruise control.
Dinos in America.
So anyway, it's horrible. There are no characterizations. Okay, everybody looks bored. Everything is very flat. You know, I started writing my review, and I have written as far as the part where it's like, apparently, you know, Star-Lord and Ginger Girl were able to get over their total lack of chemistry to have a relationship, which then broke up because they have no chemistry together, okay?
Right.
This is literally, the whole thing is like, you know, hey, remember the time that we did, I don't believe that you people even, like, you know, shared an elevator and whatnot, you know? Seriously. You know, if you told me, you know, yeah, she got on the elevator and he was standing next to the button and she goes, could you press 5, please? And he goes, okay, that wouldn't have happened because there's no chemistry between these people.
Oh my God. That's bad.
It's what's so frustrating though. And like I said, and this thing's making money hand over fist. Though I don't see anybody talking about like, yeah, I went and saw Jurassic World and it was so awesome. But how the hell is it that, you know, I mean, seriously, it basically the whole movie, and this was written by Colin Trevorrow, who directed the last one, and he's going to be writing, I guess, directing the next one. It's like, in fact, I saw a review, I think it was Movie Bob, who said, you know, yeah, this is the guy who's supposed to be directing episode 9, dodge that bullet, you know. But here, the thing is just so frustrating about this, and not that it's a crappy movie that's making a lot of money, but the thing is that the bar of the sequels has been fairly low. There's plenty of videos. Patrick H. Willems did a thing about how, you know, the sequels are all worse and what the third next one would be. Then he actually made one about this. Okay.
As someone who vehemently didn't see this movie, I've seen the full spoilers. I pretty much know how the story goes.
Right.
There are at least 4 points that I could talk about without seeing the movie that I have a major fucking problem with.
Do you have a major
problem?
And
I guarantee you three out of those four would be like, wow, dude, that's a good point.
Okay.
Because it's not what you think, but it's what I notice.
What would that
be? I'll just pick one at random. How the gate control for the mythical sea gate from the lake that moved from the middle of the island
to the shore.
To the shore. allows a giant sea monster to escape.
Right.
And, you know, sub note, how did it survive for the, 2 years that they're chronologically?
Three years since
for the 3 years since we gave up, you know, since we left.
Well, it's lost a lot of weight. It's thinner. I don't know.
And I bet it's real fun at parties.
Yep.
But, you know, that's just one. That's the one I pulled out. I can pull out another one about how the hot goth chick holds off an elite trained force of mercenaries holding guns just by picking up a gun that one of them was holding and pointing it at them going, "You don't want to make me kill you. You don't want me to make you kill me."
No, I think
I'm an expert on biology, and I can save
Blue, who had been shot because he attacked somebody.
But I've never seen a dinosaur before, but I've read a lot in books.
Well, yeah, I mean, and there's also there's a plot detail. There's a plot detail. Basically, they need Blue's DNA to do something like this. But the thing is, they gave it a T-Rex transfusion, so now its blood is impure.
And
let's talk about the new dinosaur real quick, because every review I've seen has spotted the same fallacy with the whole premise of this thing. So this new thing is called Indoraptor. All right, it's this big, stupid, you know, Velociraptor looking thing. It's not as cool as Indominus Rex. All right.
No.
Anyway, what they've trained this thing to do is to be an assassin. And what they show it as, they show like a machine gun with a laser sight. Yes. And what you do is you take the laser sight and you point it at somebody, and then you push a button which emits a sound which triggers the Indoraptor to attack the person that was put the laser.
Yes.
Everybody has made the same observation. Well, if you've got a gun and a laser sight and you have your target there, why don't you just shoot the person and leave the whole dinosaur out of things? In fact, I told this to somebody and they says, well, maybe it's crueler. You just want them dead, right? You know, how much longer or how much slower is the death going to be because of dinosaurs eating them? I mean, if you want to give them like, oh my God, a dinosaur is eating me and I'm dead, you know?
Well,
if you want to get an extra 5 seconds out of it, sure.
This is children grown up in our society. They don't look at the efficacy of a solution.
Oh my God.
They look at the like, well, if it costs more, it must be better. It doesn't mean that it does better.
Oh, and even well, you know what?
I've got this. I've got these boards that I need to attach to other boards, and I have this thing called a hammer.
Right.
And I have these things called nails.
Right.
And I can pound this hammer into these nails and attach these boards together. But if I've got the Nail Master 10,000 that can spit 50,000 nails in a minute on a single charge, doesn't that look better?
No.
But it still gets you to the same place.
Right. So anyway, the thing is, I mean, seriously, the drive home, it's about a half an hour drive from the movie theater to Hermione's place. The whole drive home was basically me making yelling noises about how much I hated this fucking movie.
Dude.
And she even was like, she like would give it a 5. I give it a 3 out of 10. Skip it. There are some very beautiful shots that are composed.
Yes.
There's a couple of sequences which are kind of okay, but we're talking about not even scenes, but shots and moments in a movie that is just offensively lazy and contemptuous.
It's raping your eardrums and your senses. The visuals that, you know, it's like, hi, I'm sorry. Can I bend you over the couch and fuck you up the ass, but I'll give you a chocolate bar when I'm done.
Give me the chocolate bar first.
No.
But,
no.
Well then, no deal then.
You get it after.
The thing is, here's another thing Hermione likes to do. She goes, oh, why do they have to show the dinosaur on the dock with the ash coming around it?
Junior made a point to mention that.
And she mentioned it because it's so sad. I go, are you sad for the pixels that are dying of the non-existent? Oh my God. I hate that.
But
you know?
This is the whole, hi, look at what the puppet's doing.
Right.
Meanwhile, Meanwhile, the other hand that isn't manipulating the puppet is manipulating something else.
Yeah.
It's reaching and it's grabbing.
Right.
It's probing.
Okay.
With spiked fingers.
So anyway, I mean, even she doesn't, you know, care to defend the movie. It's, I swear to God, I'd like to think that but here's the thing. People are going to be like, well, I want to see what happens at the end, even though they give away shots in the trailer, like the big, you know, whatever the big dinosaur in the tank is now. Is it in the wave behind the surfers?
Actually, it's a Bipleurodon.
Okay. Well, anyhow, they show that it gets out. That's spoiled in the trailer. They have the shot of the T-Rex yelling at the lion.
Yeah. And that's pretty much the shot. We don't get a payoff on those.
Well, no.
This is pretty... Again, it comes back to the... They blow the wad in the trailer, and you're like, okay, wow, I can't wait to see how this one plays out. But, not only do they sometimes erase it from the movie itself, but pretty much what you've seen in the trailer and you've been expecting to get the denouement for,
right?
Guess what?
Nope.
This way to the egress.
Yep. So anyway, it's just infuriatingly bad. I mean, and the thing is, like I said, we've reviewed tons of bad movies. We've been disappointed by movies. But the thing is that this really pisses me off. It's just the fact that you don't have to try hard, but you guys didn't even try. You basically walked in with a checklist of crap that people expect in a Jurassic Park world movie. Check, 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 did all this
checklist,
stuff.
Checklist, checklist,
checklist. And it's like, it's a reheated mashup of the last four movies. And then somehow irradiated it until it has no organic nutritional value whatsoever.
Yeah.
And in the lack of characters and stuff like this, I mean, seriously, if every single character in that movie ended up dead, I would have felt nothing. I don't even know if I've been happy about it. Okay.
Right.
I mean, and there's the obligatory, oh, and then here's the rich asshole being bitten by the thing. I mean, you can see what they're referencing, right.
You can hear the bell ringing when these things happen.
In Lost World where the two dinosaurs tear the guy apart. They do that again. Okay.
Yeah. But okay. Let's look at the person in Lost World that the two dinosaurs tear apart.
Right.
This was a helpful, tech-savvy.
Yes.
I mean, all this guy...
The guy didn't deserve to die. It wasn't the lawyer.
Trank guns.
Right.
Nets.
Yeah.
He was looking for what would he always say? Violence and technology. Not a good combination.
Right.
I mean, this guy gets fucking ripped to shreds.
Yeah, but that's cool. You know, but still, the all-time champion really is the assistant in Jurassic World. You know, the poor assistant who had to babysit the kids, and she gets her long, drawn-out, horrible death. In fact, watching it again, the thing is, I did not really catch this when I saw it myself. It didn't register with me, but just because of the spectacle.
But it's true. In the theater, I was like, wow, that's a bit much.
But the fact that it's like, what does this woman do to deserve this? I mean, if it was a bad guy getting fucked over like that, sure, you know.
She annoyingly tried to take care of the kids that their aunt had no time for.
Right, right.
Wow, okay. How dare she?
All right, anyway.
Check your privilege, bitch.
So, wow, harsh. Okay.
I know, she deserved to die.
All right. Anyway, we're angry about that, too.
Well, it's sad that we've reached a point in this society, in this world, that... I mean, it's like, do you expect anything better? I'm dumbfounded. This was going to be my exclamation point on the whole thing. I've never been more sad to be so right.
Okay.
I mean, because I called it note for note. We've had lengthy discussions about this. I pretty much called this motherfucker from the word go.
Right.
From the first goddamn trailer. I was like, oh my God, I don't want any part of this.
Sure.
And I'm so glad I did. But I've never been more regretful that I'm so right.
I hate being right. Yep. Well, the thing is, like I said, the first trailer, I was really, I remember if you go back to the show, I'm like, wow, everybody looks bored. They look bored. And like, it's like, God, I wish I hadn't signed the contract for multiple movies. I wish I'd been killed off in the last one.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned at the time about how bored even Chris Pratt looked.
Yeah.
And I described it, I compared it, he was Bradley Cooper in Hangover 3 bored.
Mm-hmm.
And when you understand how long it takes to shoot a movie, it takes weeks, months to shoot a movie, to be that bored and every freaking time you step in front of the camera, holy cow, you know? So anyway, it's just...
You're just cashing the check.
But here's the thing though, man. You know, the audiences have rewarded it with big, giant piles of money. Star Wars is in trouble. Certain people are happy that it's in trouble because now things will be changed. But let's look at, I mean, seriously, dumb popcorn. Oh, I totally forgot to mention Billy Dee Williams is going to be in episode 9.
Yep.
Because, well, hell, why not bring out some more people?
What is all the buzz? How are they going to kill him? How are they going to embarrass this character? How are we going to shit on this one?
Yep.
You're going to give him a little feathered bird to sit on his shoulder and go, wow!
All right. Anyway, well, since we're talking about how Jurassic Park is dead to us, let's talk about people who died. Yes. So anyway, a bunch of people passed away in the last few weeks.
Yeah, we've had a few.
Yeah. First of all, Vinnie Paul, the drummer for Pantera. Yeah. He passed away. I don't know why, cause of death.
Him and Daryl are definitely, and this is no exaggeration, rocking the fuck out of heaven.
Yep. He was only
could you imagine?
He was only 54 years old, and, you know, don't know what happened to him. But a lot of people I know who are in town who have bands who played with something else.
Vinnie Paul's, or
Damn Good. What was it called?
Damn Good.
Yeah, it's one band. Dead and Five opened for them, and a lot of people pictures. Everyone said he was really cool and nice guy.
Oh, yeah. All of them were good guys.
Sure. Well, isn't Anselmo kind of an asshole?
Yeah, Anselmo's a total douche bitch. But my brother had a meet and greet years ago with White Zombie and Pantera, and Rob Zombie, bitch, didn't show up, and neither did Phil. But the other White Zombie showed up, and the rest of Pantera showed up. Those guys, class acts, and I actually got to talk to Dimebag for a bit, you know, and he was one of the coolest motherfuckers I ever met.
Yeah,
one
of the more bullshit deaths too.
When assholes like Bieber just keep moving on.
Yeah, but they're
guys like that get taken out.
On the upside, they are still alive. On the downside, they're still Bieber.
True.
So
but definitely
Bieber,
still a Bieber.
All right. Also passing away, Richard Harrison, aka the old man from Pawn Stars.
Yeah,
he was 77, but I thought he was like 90 because he looked that old.
Yeah, he was Skeletor and his creepy kids.
Anyway, I when I posted on Facebook, I said, his dying word was idiots. Joe Jackson passed away. No, not the cool musician, but Joe Jackson, the patriarch of the Jackson family, Michael and Janet and everybody. He was 89 years old.
The man who warped Michael?
Man who warped a lot of people, I think.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was 89 years old.
His fingers were into everything, not just his kids.
Passing away at the age of 84, Harlan Ellison, sci-fi author and the writer of what everybody considers the best Star Trek, the original series episode, City on the Edge of Forever, which I guess he hated.
You know what I liked about Harlan Ellison was seeing interviews and stuff with him, and whenever he wasn't talking about that. Look past the one thing that you're like, and see that this was actually a talented individual.
Sure.
Who had many cool things to say. He was one of the first people I looked at where I was like, well, he's got a really cool attitude.
Cool beans. All right. Anyway, he is dead. Robbie Muller. This is a name that most people won't know, but he was a cinematographer, and he did work with Lars von Trier, Alex Cox, Barbe Schroeder, Jim Jarmusch. He did Shot to Live and Die in L.A., Repo Man, Barfly. Last movie he did was 24-Hour Party People. Anyway,
really?
Yeah.
That was the last one he did?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
The same guy who did Repo Man?
Yep.
Wow, I am...
So anyway,
he gets more bells for that.
Paris, Texas, a whole bunch of good stuff like that. So anyway, he was a European guy, but he did a lot of work with American and brought his distinctive vibe.
Some of the most beautiful images you've seen in your life without even knowing it, man created.
Yep, cinematographers are the underrated people in the world. Anyway, that was the last thing. Tab Hunter passed away. And
Holy shit.
Yes. 3 days short of his 87th birthday.
Was his last role as Connie's fiance Merle in The Godfather 2?
Oh, no. No, he was doing John Waters movies, man. He did Lust in the Dust with Divine and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Oh,
after that.
I'm sorry. That wasn't Tab Hunter.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll come back to it. I'll come back to it.
Well, anyway, the thing is that the
Tab Hunter, different.
Yeah, Tab Hunter, he was the golden boy, matinee idol, super deeply closeted. They were setting him up with Natalie Wood.
Right. He was Rock Hudson before Rock Hudson knew what Rock Hudson was.
Well, apparently they're going to be making a movie about his affair with Anthony Perkins, and Zach Quinto is going to be playing Anthony Perkins. So,
perfect choice.
Yeah, perfect. Well, yeah, that's
sometimes it just falls into your lap, no pun intended.
Yeah, I think Zach will be able to get that sweaty vibe.
No, Quinto's got that, man.
Oh yeah. Yeah, sure. Let's see who else has died. Steve Ditko.
Yes.
Co-creator of Doctor Strange and Spider-Man. He was 90. And I guess he was still
is the
on
reason
then.
Spidey has wings.
Oh, really? Under,
yeah, he created the web wings.
Viceroy comic. Preach on, Steve Ditko.
Yeah. This man was also a co-creator of Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. He created Squirrel Girl. He created Blue Beetle. Those characters. Crime Buster, Nightshade. Just one of those workhorse artists, just like Jack Kirby, just, you know, one of the Carmen Infantino, Dick Sprang, right. just one of the iconic fucking artists of comics, Gardner Fox. Oh, no, wait, Gardner Fox was a writer. I'm sorry. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, when you, in the pantheon of comic creators, you know, Stan Lee, Jules Schwartz,
sure,
Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko is right there.
Yep.
He also helped create Daredevil.
Sure.
I could go on and on, but
we are running out of time. So.
Yeah. He was ostracized for his beliefs outside of his job, which so many people forget.
Okay.
You don't have to judge a person's character by what their product is. Art and religion and political beliefs should be separated.
You'd think, but nope.
Yeah.
We don't get to have any fun. Passing away, I don't know if you've heard about this, okay? So I'm almost afraid of how you're going to react to this. Also passing away, the Bob Lobote St. Clair.
I was the Columbia. So
okay. Well,
may the St. Clair rot in hell.
Okay.
And anyone who served on either ship knows what I mean.
Well, the St. Clair burned last week.
Yep.
It was, they were working on it. I think it was a welding fire. And, this is the movie. This one was in Transformers 4. They added a second, funnel to it.
Yep.
And that's where one of the Autobots was hiding inside. But, anyway, yeah. In fact, some really good drone footage was taken by Cameron Jesus, a local photographer.
Uh-huh.
Really beautiful stuff. But boy, it torched up pretty bad.
I give three bells to a noble competitor. There was, running, I served on the Columbia. There were twin boats.
Right.
And there were subtle differences between the two.
And we
talked. The main reason about the St. Clair that I didn't like it was because it did not have a bunk bed in the purser's cabin.
Ah.
In the purser's cabin of the Columbia, there was a bunk bed, and the second bunk was mine.
Cool.
So that is basically why I left one above the other.
And I'll give another three bells. I'll throw a link into the episode Bobalo Bloods and Crips, where the music is coming up right now, and where we talked about your time as a DJ on the Bobalo Boats. Okay, music's coming up, which means it's time to thank our shout-out level Patreon supporters, Anguis Veritas and Johnny Martinuk, for their kind support, financial support, to keep the lights on here. If you want to give us some money, if you enjoyed it and made it through the show.
Otto really needs money. Send money, kids.
Patreon.com/culturevulturesradio, and the link is at culturevulturesradio.com, where the show notes for this episode will be. Benefits of getting the Patreon is that you get the show as soon as it's mixed before show notes are done, and occasionally we do a tinfoil swan, talk about some other stuff. We have to do one of those in the near future.
We'll bring Bob in for the after birthday.
Right.
After birthday bloodletting.
Okay, some quick fun items we have been ignoring for a bit. So anyway, the new thing that's going on right now is extreme embalming, where basically people are being basically laid out, not in caskets, but in the way they live their lives. Some kid who got shot in urban violence, he was posed sitting up with a game controller in his hand with Mountain Dew and Doritos around him and a TV watching Golden State Warrior and the Boston Celtics, and it's really creepy. It's going on.
Warning, you are so full of bullshit.
There's a guy
who got
buried, was shown behind the wheel of his car. Other people doing activities. I saw this. I posted. I go, listen, if I do this, I want to be, you know, memorialized the way I died in that crazy four-way with Katy Perry, Anne Hathaway, and Taylor Swift, because people have to know.
Me and Hermione are going to burn your ass, throw you in a Folgers coffee can, and go to fucking Orlando.
Okay, fine. Do that, too. Also, people dying. A husband came home to find that his wife was fucking the mechanic in their car in the garage, but the engine was running, and they died of carbon monoxide poisoning. Because apparently she was trading sex for auto work, except the fact is that it's like, if this guy doesn't know that you shouldn't run a car in a closed garage, how good is the work going to be? A friend of mine...
I heard he had a really good tool.
Bob, I'm going to kill somebody. Koski says, well, I guess she asked for the front end alignment. Another friend of mine asked, well, I wonder what the Carfax for that one looks like. And I said, yeah, I go, it'll say previous accidents. Dude, whoa, really? So anyway, also a really cool video of cats, a bunch of cats in some sort of room full of cats that they sense something's coming up and then an earthquake hits. And then they freak out, but they knew something was going to happen. They didn't know what, but they're all like looking around like, what? And then the earthquake hits. Anyway, we'll have that all at culturevulturesradio.com. It's culturevulturesandthat'sradio.com. If you are listening to this on the podcast that you subscribe through iTunes or Stitcher, it's going to be right there on the link. You can just hit it and go. If you're at culturevulturesradio.com, you're already there. See the show notes and liner notes for all the things that we talked about tonight. Anyway, Culture Vultures is a production of Dirk Omnimedia, copyright 2018. The show is created, produced, engineered, and hosted by me, Peter Shorn, playing the role of Dirk Belliger, the role of Otto the Autopilot. It's played by Chris Smith. The music is Caper by Def Ref. And you can find all these things at culturevulturesradio.com. Please give us a like on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. If you want to give us some money, go to Patreon and give us some money so we can help charity and this and that and also keep the lights on. But hey, that's the way things go. Anyway, once again, broadcasting from where summer colds really suck, we are the Coughing and Wheezing Culture Vultures. You all be safe out there and healthy.
Peace.
Good night.